It's Friday. This is Afternoons Live. My name is Dane DeCray, in for Tyler Axness. Last segment of the day. There'll be no joking here. This is a very serious topic that's near and dear to my heart, and so I want to jump right into it. With me to end out the day is Dr. Kimberly Kolkhorst. She is the chair of the gastroenterology department at Essentia Health and a gastroenterologist herself. She literally came from work and had another doctor do an appointment for her so she could be here in the studio because I think she, like me, believes in this important segment. Doctor, thank you for coming on.
Dane, thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here. This is a really important topic that we need to be able to talk about.
And that topic is colorectal cancer. This month is colorectal cancer month. And I have to tell you, when I started looking into this, it is wild how unknown this is and how much it's creeping up in our society. And so I had a segment earlier today where I said, I don't know a lot of stuff about this topic, and normally I don't like to bring a guest on when I don't. So I'm going to lean on you a lot here. Talk me through why this type of cancer has its own month, what's going on, and why we need as a community to understand it.
Absolutely. Well, yes, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, but I like to say that every day is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Day in our lives because we're diagnosing this disease every single day. Right now, we know that colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States, and globally is the third most commonly diagnosed cancer in males and in females. There is a slightly higher incidence in males than there is in females. And the most alarming thing, too, is that we're really starting to notice a trend where we're seeing a lot more colorectal cancer in our younger patients, the patients that are less than the age of 50.
It gives me goosebumps when I hear those numbers. I knew that a bit, but when I hear it out loud, it should be you giving everybody who's listening goosebumps too. So I guess my first question is, you know, what do we do to stem the tide? You know, day one, you know, what can young people, I'm under 50, you know, I hear that. What do I need to do now that I know about this creeping, you know, pandemic, or no, that's not the right word, but this impending thing?
Absolutely. Well, one step in the right direction is recently the United States Preventive Task Force decreased the screening age. So it used to be that we would start screening colonoscopy at the age of 50, and now we've actually lowered it to 45. So we're more likely to catch those patients now between the ages of 45 to 50, which is kind of surprising for all the patients and friends in my age group. Where all of a sudden we're like, oh boy, now I need to have a colonoscopy. I thought I could wait till 50. But now we're starting at 45, and that's for average risk screening colonoscopy, meaning no family history of colon cancer, not having any symptoms, no high-risk diseases like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, or genetic conditions that increase your risk for colon cancer. So average risk starting at 45 now.
And yep. If you have heightened risk, is it earlier?
Yes. Yep. It's individualized based on what they have and based on family history. So that age might be lower based on individual diseases.
Sure. And, you know, part of me was worried about this segment, you know, making jokes about, you know, I remember growing up, my dad's friends would joke like, oh, you're almost old enough for your colonoscopy. And it was a joke. And yeah. You avoided it or you suffered through it. But I think there needs to be some demystification of that too, because with these stats and this stuff we're talking about, I don't even really know. What is a colonoscopy? How does it happen? You know, is it the boogeyman that my dad and his friends would joke about when we were kids?
Well, if you know that there's something you can prevent, why wouldn't you try to prevent it? And so that's why, I mean, if you think about women have to have mammograms and pap smears, you know, men have to have their prostates checked. This is just one more thing that we need to really be on top of and doing. And so, yeah, so in order to check for this, we do screenings, and there's actually a few different types of screenings, but the main two types are colonoscopy, which is an actual procedure. What's beautiful about a colonoscopy is that it's both preventative and diagnostic all in the same procedure. And what that means is basically during the procedure, I can remove polyps, which are precancerous growths. They're little tissue growths that if you don't take them out, then they continue to grow, and that's what turns into a cancer. So at the time of a colonoscopy, I can remove those polyps. And then it's also diagnostic, meaning I can check to see if there's any colon cancer. So colonoscopy is considered the gold standard for screening. And then we always say any screening is better than none. So we also have the advent of ColoGuards. And you might have seen commercials where it's a little box that's talking, a cartoon box. And so you basically submit your stool and it's checking for DNA associated with colon cancer. Like I said, any screening is better than none. There are a lot of false positives with that test. So I do warn the patients that if you get a positive, it doesn't mean you have colon cancer, but it does mean that you now have to go get a colonoscopy.
Sure.
The other thing is it's detecting DNA associated with colon cancer, so it may not necessarily be detecting polyps. So you could still have polyps and have a negative ColoGuard test.
So the top line is get a colonoscopy.
It's worth it, I promise. It's one day. The worst part is the prep. And so I tell my patients all the time, like, just stay well hydrated. You're going to take a day off for the procedure, but that one day, it's worth it. I mean, what is your life worth? And we know that if we catch this cancer sooner, that your outcome is so much more improved. So if we catch this at early stages, stage 1 and 2, then you're more likely to have high survival. The issue is, especially in our young patients, they're not thinking about colon cancer. So they're probably having symptoms and they're putting it off. And then by the time they actually present for their first colonoscopy, unfortunately, at that point, we're finding it at stage 4, where it's now metastasized or spread to other organs in the body. And at that point, you have a much lower survival.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned ColoGuard. Our son is a little too smart for his own good. We watch the news at night, and he knows the jingle. So if he's listening out there, he's probably singing the jingle at home. So, but, you know, jokes aside, I think that what I'd like to talk about when we get back, we're about a minute for the first break, is one of the things that would stop people like me before hearing this is, how do I get my health insurance provider to do it? Do I go talk to my general doctor? Can I just go in and say, hello, Essentia, I'd like one colonoscopy next Wednesday? It's daunting with healthcare and pre-clearance and things like that. So When we come back, I want to talk about, you know, if people are motivated, and they should be, to go out and think about this and do this afterwards, how do we do it? What are the best ways? And, you know, demystifying that too, because this is shrouded in secrecy. So can you stay back for
you
one last
betcha.
Segment? All right. Everybody, this is Afternoons Live. We're talking about colorectal cancer. This is Dane DeCray in place for Tyler Axness. All right, we're back on Afternoons Live. This is Dane DeCray. Again, I'm here with Dr. Kimberly Kolkhorst, the chair of the gastroenterology department at Essentia Health and a gastroenterologist herself. When we left on the backside of the break, I was talking about what do you do. What are the first steps towards getting yourself a colonoscopy?
Yes, absolutely. First step would be to talk about it. If you're having symptoms, please speak up, talk about it, and don't be afraid. If you see things, and if like, we'll get into symptoms, but if you're seeing persistent bleeding, for example, then please go to your primary care doctor and tell them what's going on and talk about it. And then when you see your primary care doctor, also bring up, say, I'm this age, this is my family history, when am I due for a screening colonoscopy? And have the conversation. It usually starts with a primary care doctor. If you're having symptoms, sometimes patients go into the walk-in clinics or they go into the emergency room, and then you can kind of come in through that window as well. But I would say just start with a primary care doctor and ask them, when do I start screening colonoscopies? And then they can usually place the referral for the colonoscopy from there. Or if after discussion you decide you prefer to do the ColoGuard, then they would order the ColoGuard test as well.
So the top line I hear from there is if you're suffering, it's like the thing at the airport. If you see something, say something.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, men maybe more than women, really, you know, you see some blood in your stool, you don't tell anybody. You wipe and you flush it down. And I know that's maybe a gross thing to say on the radio, but it's true. And that's the kind of stuff I think to lead to the numbers. So there is stigma, and
yes.
But it can get better.
Yes. Yes. I think that is what's happening is that, and especially for our younger patients below the age of 50, they're not even thinking about colon cancer. So if they're having symptoms, then they're just like, oh, it's probably irritable bowel syndrome, or maybe it's hemorrhoids. So they think it's something else, and then they're more likely to put it off. And so just have a conversation, talk about it, with your healthcare provider, and then they would go ahead and order the next test for you.
Okay. So we talked about it before. So you're seeing symptoms. what are the symptoms that would make you say, I got to go to the doctor?
Absolutely. So usually the most common is going to be rectal bleeding, especially if it's a rectal cancer or sigmoid colon cancer, because that's closer to the exit. But sometimes if it's a mass that's over on the cecum, which is all the way at the beginning of the colon, then you might have more darker stools. They won't be as bright red blood. So, but any blood in the stools, change in bowel habits, meaning a new onset diarrhea or constipation, where, hey, I've always had normal bowel movements, and all of a sudden the past few months, things are not right. I mean, this is different than Montezuma's revenge if you go to Mexico and you get diarrhea, and you know, it's different. I mean, this is more that you've had a change in bowel habits that's persisted despite a infectious illness. Then unintentional weight loss is also another one. If you're starting to notice your clothes are getting a little big on you, then probably you need to get that worked up. Sometimes abdominal pain, abdominal bloating, also anemia is another sign of this.
I would say err on the side of caution.
Absolutely.
Because what's the worst case is you go in and it's a nothing burger.
Yeah, and I tell patients that. I say it's great peace of mind. Just get it done. If it's normal, fabulous. Then at least you know. Because you just don't know what's going on in there until we take a look.
Right. All right, we have 30 seconds left. I'm going to put you on the spot. You take us out for my second
Holy
show of
moly.
Afternoon's Life. What do people need to know as the last part?
All right, what's causing this? Right now, especially in our young patients, what's interesting is they don't have a family history of colon cancer in the ones under 50. So is there something environmental going on here? That's what I'm concerned about. I'm worried about diet. We know that diets high in processed meats and red meats are increasing your risk. So that's why really the best diet is that Mediterranean diet. Eat more fruits and vegetables, whole grains, nuts, olive oil, and try to avoid the red meats.
Thank you so much for coming in again. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time. This is Dane DeCray signing out of his second show. Thanks, folks.